The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Of course, the big breaking news, as you would have just heard in the news headlines there, is that Nikita Hand has won her civil case against Conor McGregor. Frank Rainey, our courts correspondent, with me now. Frank, what can you tell us?
Good evening, Kieran. Yes, I'm joining you from just outside the courtroom here down at the Four Courts, where, as you say, Nikita Hand, in the last few minutes, won her case, her civil legal action against Conor McGregor. Mr. McGregor has already left the courtroom. He didn't stop to make a statement to the gathered media. As you can imagine, there is an awful lot of journalists and camera crews and photographers outside court as I speak to you this evening. He got into a Bentley that had parked up to take him and his fiancée, Dee Devlin, away from the courthouse. But Nikita Hand, the plaintiff, is still in there. She is expected to come out and make a statement shortly. As you can imagine, it was standing room only in Court 24 when the jurors came back having deliberated for about 6 hours or so. This wasn't a criminal case. And it's very important to point out this was a case taken by Ms. Hand after the DPP decided not to bring criminal charges against Conor McGregor in relation to an alleged rape at the Beacon Hotel back in December of 2018. The jurors were essentially asked to decide if Conor McGregor had assaulted her, and they decided, having deliberated for 6 hours, that he had. They awarded damages compensation to her of just under €250,000. And as I'm speaking to you now, I see Nikita Hand has just left court. She is about to make a statement, Kieran. She is holding the hand of her partner, as she has done throughout the past couple of weeks. She gave evidence herself across 3 or 4 days in the witness box. A very, very difficult thing to do. I approached Nikita in the courtroom after the verdict was delivered to just to congratulate her and to tell her that she was a very brave woman to do what she did, because after the DPP decided not to bring a criminal case against Conor McGregor, she decided that she was going to go down another route. She wanted to get her vindication, and okay, she's making her statement as we speak.
I'll let you get over to that there, Frank, and we might talk to you in just a moment. But Nolene Blackwell is with us, and as soon as we have that statement, because she's making a public statement, she's speaking herself. Quite often people in this situation might speak through their legal team, but Nikita Hand is addressing the media outside court, and we get a recording of that and bring it to you ASAP. But Nolene Blackwell is with me, human rights lawyer, a consultant and online safety coordinator with the Children's Rights Alliance. And Nolene, lots of people listening to this will know of your background with the Rape Crisis Centre. We also know that calls to the Rape Crisis Centre rose during the Conor McGregor case. So actually, we have Nikita Hand, actually. Let's take a listen.
And my three barristers, John Gordon, Ray Boland and Sean, they have been amazing from start to finish. I want to thank Mr. Justice Alexander Owens, the jury, all the witnesses. I want to thank the doctors, nurses and everyone at the Sexual Assault Treatment Unit in the Rotunda Hospital for looking after me, especially my own Dr. Frank Clark. I want to thank the Rape Crisis Centre, especially Cleena, who has been by my side throughout this entire period. I want to thank all the guards and the ambulance crew. I want to thank all the women and men out there who have supported me throughout this trial. For every person who reached out to me, a card, a letter, email, everything, it hasn't gone unnoticed. Thank you. I really appreciate it so much. I want to thank my partner, Gary, who has been so supportive for the last 4 years and has held my hand throughout this trial every day and every other day. I want to thank my mum and all my family and friends. Lastly, I want to thank my daughter, Freya, who I'm most grateful for. She has given me so much strength and courage over the last 6 years throughout this nightmare to keep on pushing forward for justice. I want to show Freya and every other girl and boy that you can stand up for yourself if something happens to you, no matter who the person is, and justice will be served. To all the victims of sexual assault, I hope my story is a reminder that no matter how afraid you might be, speak up, you have a voice, and keep on fighting for justice. I know this has impacted not only my life, my daughters, my family and friends tremendously, and it's something that I'll never forget for the rest of my life. But now that justice has been served, I can now try and move on and look forward to the future with my family and friends and daughter.
Nikita, what have the last 2 weeks been like?
A nightmare.
What is it like finally to be believed?
I have no words. It's unbelievable. And thanks so much. Yes, I do. I do. Thank you. I need to take a minute.
Yeah, that's Nikita Hand speaking outside the court, that civil court finding that Conor McGregor raped her on the balance of probabilities in 2018, according to Nikita Hand's evidence. Frank Rainey, our courts correspondent, was making it abundantly clear this is not a criminal case and it should not be treated. We should not talk about it as a criminal case. But nonetheless, the jury has decided in Nikita Hand's favour, and Nikita Hand alleging that Conor McGregor and James Lawrence raped her in 2018. They did not find that James Lawrence was guilty of rape in that case. I know Conor McGregor getting a lot of the attention, understandably, but I mentioned Nolene Blackwell, who's with me, the human rights lawyer, the consultant and online safety coordinator with the Children's Rights Alliance. And Nolene, sorry, I kind of cut across you as I was about to put something to you when we went to Nikita Hand there. But the point I was putting to you was that you have a background in the Rape Crisis Centre that people will be aware of, and calls to that centre rose during the McGregor case. I mean, these are not just kind of celebrity stories that people are fascinated by. These stories have a profound impact on people.
Yeah, and people associate with them as well along the way. So many people who feel they can't or won't be able to say it themselves, they associate with them. And that's the importance of having the services there, having the services accompanying her to court, accompanying Nikita Hand to court, and then having the phone line available. And Kieran, I'm just going to say the number once now. I'm sure you'll be repeating it again. But the number, if people need to call, it's 1-800-77-88-88, and it's a 24-hour helpline. Undoubtedly, people will associate with this as well. I find myself terribly moved by Nikita Hand and her own statement there at the end. It was just so so heartfelt. And when she was asked what she believed, and she said even that was nearly unbelievable, because it is just such an intimate thing that happens. And the reason, I mean, it's not called rape in the civil courts, it's called sexual assault, because that's the way the civil courts operate. But clearly what the jury found was that there was a very serious sexual assault. They awarded general damages, they awarded her damages for her loss of earnings because she could no longer do her job, and they really did make the point that they understood that something had happened which was seriously non-consensual. But when you're in court, in the criminal courts, okay, it's still an awful ordeal because you're telling it to a whole room of strangers. But Nikita Hand, because this was a civil court and because our civil courts still aren't fit for purpose in this area, every single word and every single piece of evidence was repeated and transferred nearly on an hour-to-hour basis, nearly minute-to-minute basis along the way. So she had to say things she had to go into this case knowing that she would have to talk about things that are so intimate that, you know, you don't even talk about them maybe to your own family, you know, to brothers or sisters, to your friends. You don't talk about this level of intimacy. But that is what she had to do and be cross-examined on over a period of days in order to make the case that non-consensual sexual activity had taken place. And you have to say, I don't know, like, how she was able to keep up her energy to do it all along the way. I mean, I feel for everyone, actually, all the parties in these civil cases, they are all exposed in a way that is absolutely not decent and should be fixed. But just for her, and also for the jurors who were there all along that time, they walk away now. If they need support as well, they should be able to get support. If they have an issue, let them remember that this has an impact on them as well, and that they are entitled to look for support in relation to that as well. But just for her, to have to go through it, knowing it would be in public, and knowing, and how often did she say justice in those last pieces? Justice for herself and justice for people into the future.
But it's also, I mean, it's vindication for her version of events, Nolene. And how often have you and I had this conversation, and you've had it countless times with other people as well, about the reluctance of some victims to come forward because the fear they had. I mean, there can be a whole myriad of reasons people be reluctant, but sometimes the reason is the fear is they won't be believed. People won't believe
me.
And there maybe isn't the physical evidence. It's a he said, she said, and people will just not believe me.
That's right. And you look and you think, just look back on our own history, on the way we have developed as a society. It's a very sensible thing to wonder, will people believe me? Because the reality is that even in this trial, it has been discussed a lot, but I've been in discussions where people did not believe either what she was saying. And the same old things are coming up the whole time. Maybe she brought it on herself. Maybe in some ways she was responsible for her own assault. We don't do it in other areas of crime. We do not blame the victim. But in sexual assault, we blame the victim still a little bit. So you have to take that into account. But I will say this, Ciarán, I think we have come a good way, even in the years since, say, the last big sports celebrity trial, which was the Northern Ireland criminal trial of the rugby players, where they were acquitted. But the discussion was really, really strong. And there was I think there was less understanding that non-consensual sex, no matter how you dress it up, no matter what you think, if you don't have the full informed consent of everybody involved in it, you should not be having sex with somebody. That's just the holy all of it. And so, and I think we've come some way along the line, because there was that kind of, I felt there was a more nuanced debate happening this time round. And I don't know why that was. And maybe I'm only dreaming it and hoping that that is the case. But undoubtedly, she has done a benefit, not just for herself, but also for building up that recognition that, you know, these are things that you should not have to talk about in public. These are things that should not happen in the first place. And she has made the case that it was wrong that it happened, and she has stayed the course as best she can at huge cost to herself, I have no doubt, as well as to her family and community.
Dr. Elaine Burns is with us as well from the School of Psychology at DCU. And Elaine, when Nolene mentioned kind of the Belfast trial, I mean, that did become an opportunity for conversations to be had on mediums like this, and maybe around dinner tables and in classrooms, and certainly in lecture halls up and down the country. It became kind of a learning opportunity for people around consent and our understanding of it, and kind of the explicit nature of it, where it was kind of this thing that maybe was a bit fuzzy or fudged in the past in people's minds when it shouldn't have been. Is this something similar, Elaine? Is this an opportunity to learn?
I think this is a huge opportunity, Ciarán. And just to reiterate what Nolene was saying about Nikita's statement there, it was so powerful. It was so heartfelt. The relief in her voice, the culmination of years of not being believed. And that was the hashtag of the Belfast trial, if you remember, I believe her. And yet here we were again in a similar situation with arguably a far more powerful, a far better known, a far more respected, in inverted commas, for his prowess and his success as an MMA fighter. And here we were again in this situation of rape myth after rape myth after rape myth being perpetuated. And, you know, she's lying. She was drunk. She was contacting him. All of these myths again being trotted out to explain away a violent sexual assault on a woman who was very vulnerable at the time. And yet again, we're seeing a spotlight on masculinity. And I remember at the time of the Belfast trial, Kieran, I was working at second level in a boys' school. And it offered superb opportunity for discussion on masculinity and what it means to be male. And I could see how defensive the boys were when that trial was ongoing, how conscious they were of almost a pressure on them to not get involved in situations where there would be any question mark over their behaviour. And I suppose this is yet another learning opportunity, I think, and it just reiterates how important we need to protect young men now, because we'll see from this again a vulnerability in them again. What do we do? Where do we go from here? How do we ensure that we do not find ourselves in situations such as this? And I think, again, for me, the importance of education, Kieran, and supporting young men, because a lot of the role models that they have when they're feeling vulnerable are people such as McGregor, are people such as Tate. You know,
these lads are big fans of each other. Andrew Tate, I think, has said he'd vote for Conor McGregor for president in this country if he could. And his brother has kind of tweeted his support of him relatively recently. And I know Conor McGregor himself, not too long ago, was kind of dismissing various legal cases around sex trafficking against the Tate brothers as somewhat vague and not really understanding them, and talking about them being kind of Cobra or Top G. You know, these guys just kind of patting each other in the back about how wonderful they are. And you know, we've talked about it on the show, I mean, the attraction that they hold to young men. And how though do you kind of, I don't know what you think. My own kind of perception is there was this necessary pushback against this idea of kind of toxic masculinity, which these guys to me would represent. But there was never the conversation then about a healthy or a positive example. And it left young men feeling a little kind of lost. And these were the only people kind of speaking for them. They felt, and they gravitated towards them.
I think so. And I think when we, you know, we saw the whole Me Too movement, we saw I Believe Her after the Belfast trial, we're seeing a spotlight again on masculinity with this trial. And I think, you know, Me Too in particular gave voice to women who didn't have voice before. And I think that there was certainly a defensiveness in men, and particularly young men, Kieran, young impressionable men, and it's like, who's going to speak for us? And I have certainly seen that in sexual health modules, and particularly with young men, and when it comes to consent, and you know, seeing their defensiveness in that, and saying to me, you know, you're going to tell us now, Elaine, that we're not to rape women. And here are 16-year-old boys who are already defensive and who are already defending masculinity without really necessarily understanding what it is and what it means to be a good and decent man. Because I can tell you that the vast majority of the boys that I have engaged with, none of them don't want to be anything other than decent and honourable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think as well, Kieran, we need to flip the sexual script, because as you know, and you were talking about it earlier with Nolly, we've come a long way in this country, but when it comes to sexuality, the expression of sexuality, we're still very, very traditional. And that traditional sexual script, that notion that men are always up for it and seen as initiators, they're constantly moving towards the end goal, and females are the gatekeepers deciding whether they get it or not. You know, the answer to that question and flipping that script for me always comes back to education.
We're a little tight in time here, but not overall, because this is such a big story. We're absolutely going to keep talking about it between now and 7 o'clock. But Elaine, listen, thanks a million for taking the time to speak to us. Dr. Elaine Burns, who's from the School of Psychology at DCU, Nolene Blackwell, human rights lawyer, consultant and online safety coordinator with the Children's Rights Alliance. It is worth repeating again, and Frank Grady, our courts correspondent, made this clear, this was not a criminal action, and it is not right to describe Conor McGregor as a convict in the sense that you would in a criminal case. He absolutely isn't. This was a civil case. It is a lower burden of proof in a civil case. Juries make a decision based on the balance of probabilities, not against all reasonable doubt. So there is a lower burden of proof, but that notwithstanding, the jury in this case have found in favour of Nikita Hand, who is the woman who we heard from a few minutes ago outside the court, who alleges that Conor McGregor sexually assaulted her in 2018. So the jury believing Nikita Hand's version of events.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.